Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.
Welcome to another episode of No Such Thing as a Fish, a weekly podcast, this week coming to you from the Up the Creek Comedy Club in Greenwich. My name is Dan Schreiber. I'm joined as ever by Anna Chazinski, James Harkin, and Andy Murray. And once again, we have gathered around the microphones, but this time with your favorite facts from the last 7 days, and in no particular order, here we go.
Okay.
I have a fact about the Silver Age of comics. Who's that from?
Hey, hello.
Should we do a Twitter fact while we're waiting for the microphone to get over? So this was sent in to us by John Winter Holt. There is a chemical called arsol. Nobody knows what it smells like yet. I tweeted him back to say, is that true? And he said, yeah, I study arsol for a living. And apparently true. He also told me that there's another one called arspain, which is true as well. And he said there's a mineral found near the town of Cummington, Massachusetts, and that's been called Cummingtonite.
There's one called Welshite. It was Welshite, but it's named after a guy called somebody Welsh, Henry Welsh or something.
Mr. Welsh.
Yeah.
There's a molecule called I think it's nitrogen triiodide. It's one of the most crazy molecules you can get. For a molecule, it's pretty crazy. But apparently, it will blow up if a mosquito lands on it. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's the energy of a mosquito landing on it will make it explode.
Wow. Is the mosquito all right? It's just a molecule, isn't it? It's probably fine.
Yeah. Shall we go to the fact? Yeah.
What's your name?
Charlie.
Hi, Charlie.
What's your fact, Charlie?
The Silver Age of comics. In the late 50s/60s, comics with gorillas on the front sold considerably more than comics without. DC Comics put gorillas on every single copy, even if there's no gorillas inside.
That's so good.
Amazing.
Pretty good.
Wow.
That's good.
So Superman would just be tackling a gorilla on the front and then it had no relevance to the story.
There was a comic with Superman and a gorilla was selling him a ticket or like a zoo ticket, I think.
Why would a gorilla be selling a zoo ticket? That's them colluding in their own imprisonment.
Do you know what gorillas' favourite films are?
No.
This sounds like the start of a joke.
It's not a joke. Now, I read this weekend in the Sunday Times somewhere, and it's by a musician who's really famous, but I can't remember who it is because I don't know anything about music. But he's hung out with people who've studied gorillas, and they gave them a bunch of films, and they worked out which ones the gorillas, you know, like asked with their hands to watch the most frequently. And what do you reckon the gorillas' favourite film is?
Planet of the Apes.
Very good.
No.
Planet of the Apes, yeah.
Really?
And then their second favourite was a film about a Sasquatch, a Yeti. So obviously they feel very close to Yetis. Maybe they are genetically somehow related, I think they think.
And the third favourite was just Dan's stand-up.
They didn't subject them to that, James. No. The RSPCA would get involved.
I watched The Mummy 3 on the weekend. There's a Mummy 3. There's a scene in it where there's just so much chaos going on. The terracotta warriors have become alive. There's this old Chinese group of skeletons that have come back up. It's Jason and the Argonaut style. And then suddenly these two giant Yetis come in and the good guys go, uh-oh, Yetis. And the Yetis are like, we're good guys. And they go, great. And then everyone just accepts it. It's just fine. We've got Yeti allies now who are helping us.
Do Yetis, in the myths about Yetis, do they attack people?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
They can be kind as well. There's a...
I regret asking my original question.
There's a lady in Bhutan who claims that she lived and had children with a Yeti. And the Yeti, they had about 6 children. And then she said that she was going back to society. She wanted to bring the children with them. But the Yeti said that's not going to happen. So they went to Yeti court and the Yeti won custody of the children. And that's why she doesn't have them.
Yeah. In Bhutan, this is a stretch of a link, but every government policy has to justify itself according to its world happiness index rating, doesn't it?
Isn't that Bhutan?
Gross national happiness. Yeah. So every time you make a policy, you have to say how it's going to affect the gross national happiness. And it's the only country where it's like made that, put that into policy.
Yeah. Oh. I've been to Bhutan. Yeah, I have been to Bhutan. I remember I went to the National Museum because I wanted to see the world's biggest book. They claim to have the world's biggest book. And it's a book about Bhutan.
How convenient.
And I was in the museum and they had a rat problem. Someone had seen a rat. But because it was run by monks, because it's quite a Buddhist country, they weren't allowed to hurt the rat in any way. So they weren't allowed to put poison down, or they weren't allowed to put traps down or anything like that. So all the monks were just chasing this rat.
Wow. What's the name of the very famous gorilla who's in? We talked about it on the
Coco.
Do you know what Coco's favorite movie is? I read this on the weekend, bizarrely.
Okay, so let's just say who Coco is.
Yes.
So Coco is a gorilla who learned sign language, I think, right?
Yeah.
And learned more words in sign language than anyone else. 300 people just picked me up on that today. And is often held up as the fact that animals might be able to learn language.
Yeah. So favorite movie, Pretty Woman.
Really?
Oh, okay. No. So aspirational.
Yeah.
Well done, her.
By the way, Pretty Woman, the movie, they did a thing where the hotel that it was filmed in now offers a Pretty Woman package so you can go, which is the worst message. I don't think they thought that through properly.
Who's it for?
Prostitutes and millionaires.
It's for couples, yeah.
It's for couples?
Yeah.
Wow, I've got a fact about movies. This is a fact about the movie Leon.
Whose fact is about Leon?
Whose fact is about the film Leon?
Oh, it's over there.
Oh, hey, over there.
If you put your hand up, Alex will come and find you.
Cool.
In the meantime, I've got a fact that came from Twitter. And this is from someone called @Riptor. And the fact was that the 25th Amendment allows vice presidents to take over as president when the president incapacitated. It's happened 3 times, and each time the president was having a colonoscopy.
Are those the only 3 times presidents have been incapacitated? Because I know that several
amendment.
Have been shot and killed. I keep going.
No, since the amendment was made. There's a thing about colonoscopies that you can explode during a colonoscopy. Do you know that?
What?
Wow.
Yeah, because you have a lot of gas buildup in your lower intestines, and sometimes they'll use like a cauterizing heat thing. If you've got a cut, they try and kind of burn it. And so that heat and the gases can cause people to actually explode, yeah.
Right. You would have thought, are they putting some kind of safeguards in place to stop this happening? Or is it just, 50-50, you'll either explode or... That's kind of like what happens to trees, right? When they get colonoscopies.
What do you mean?
Similar kind of, when trees are on fire, then sometimes it gets so hot and there's a buildup of gas inside them and they explode. There's really good videos of trees exploding all over the world.
When lightning hits a tree, it can explode because all the water turns immediately to water vapor and lots of it is near the middle side. Just goes out.
Wow.
It's cool. Not for the tree. It's bad for the tree.
Do we have our Leon fact yet? Okay.
So there's a scene in the movie Leon where there are loads of police cars parked outside a building. And while they were filming that scene, a man who had just robbed a shop ran onto the movie set, thought it was the real police, and handed himself in.
Such
That's
a good
amazing.
Fact.
Sorry, what's your name?
Susie.
Susie. That's an amazing fact.
I mean, how long did they let the charade continue? Yeah.
God, if they were method actors, they probably would have, right? Yeah. Taken them to the station, then they would have got in trouble themselves.
Gary Oldman's going to be arresting you today. Very exciting.
Someone actually tweeted in, this is from Twitter earlier, that Gary Newman is actually 3 weeks younger than Gary Oldman, unfortunately.
didn't think that was
facts about police. In ancient Egypt, the head of the police was called the chief of the hitters.
That's like we've talked on the podcast about the world's oldest parking fine issued by traffic wardens, which was to be decapitated, I believe.
Oh, no. No. Spike.
Yeah, it was to be impaled. It was to be impaled, wasn't it?
Yeah,
on a spike for crossing on the king's land. That was when, the king owned all of the roads. So I think it was quite hard to get around.
Yeah, and the first ever British parking ticket that was given was accidentally given to a doctor who was making an emergency call to a house. And so they had to override the parking ticket. So the first parking ticket was a cock-up, and they had to undo it.
And I think the first American one was overridden as well.
Was
the first
it?
American one was a guy who said, I literally just went into the shop for 5 minutes and I've come back and my ticket's here. And he, you know, appealed and got it overridden. Has any parking ticket ever been successful?
No.
All the ones that I've ever got have been. Have I ever told you about the guy in London in, I think it was the 60s or might have been early 70s, who electrocuted his car so that when traffic wardens tried to put a ticket on them, they got electrocuted?
Wow.
He was in like the newspapers and stuff. He became really famous.
Yeah,
and
for when he was arrested, right?
Yeah, well, he was arrested, but they let him off in the end because he'd become such a kind of cause célèbre.
Electrocuting a policeman is a bigger crime than parking on a double yellow light.
Yeah, sorry, like not electrocuting, because the word electrocuting means killing by electricity. He electrified them, let's say, with like a little bit of a shot.
They should have charged him.
He's like Angle Grinder Man in Kent, who was that superhero. He called himself a real-life superhero, and he went around with his angle grinder removing clamps from cars that had been clamped. No one knew who he was for a long time until he did an interview with a newspaper, and then people did. But yeah.
You know at the end of Iron Man, when he says, I'm Iron Man, it's like, whoa, was he like, I'm Iron Grinder Man, and they went...
He could pronounce it, so that helped.
Thought I escaped that. Okay. I genuinely as well just ran with it and went, I'm just going to mush it up so hard. Oh, is he like, I'm Mark Arendt-Ban? And it's like,
Shall we move on to another fact?
Yeah, let's move on to our next fact.
Okay, so this is about a ghost army in World War II.
All right, so while we're waiting for the mic to get over, here's another Twitter one. This is from Matthew Oglesby. The new organist of Leeds Cathedral is David Pipe. That's quite nice.
Very good.
I'm a massive fan of nominative determinism.
Yeah. Did you meet the guy who coined the term?
Yeah, we met him very briefly. Yeah,
was
we?
It
yeah.
Reginald A. Namey?
Yeah, nominative determinism. No.
You found the ultimate one, which was to do with...
Henry Head.
Yeah,
that was it. Yeah, so there was a neuroscientist called Henry Head. And he discovered this thing called head zones. You don't have one in your head, but you do have one in the head of your genitals if you're a man. But he was the head of a journal called Brain. And when he left as head of the journal Brain, he was taken over by a guy called Brain. So Head was the head of Brain until he wasn't the head of Brain anymore, and he was taken over as the head of Brain by Brain, who became the head of Brain.
Wow. So good.
Yeah.
That's really good. The ultimate.
Yeah.
I mean, no one knew what was going on in that organisation.
I saw one the other day, actually. It was, I tweeted about it, let me think. It was a guy who'd written a book about swearing, and he was called Say Gadam.
That's good.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? S-A-I, his first name. Say Gadam.
That's nice. Someone sent me one on Twitter the other day, which was a hurdler whose surname is Stumbleover.
Oh, yeah.
So good.
I think he actually famously fell over
a
hurdle.
It's a she.
Yeah.
Potato, potato. I think, didn't she stumble over a hurdle in quite an important Olympic event?
Maybe in the Olympics, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, shall we go on to the facts?
Say your name and your fact, please.
All right, I'm Nora. So my fact was that there was a ghost army in the Second World War where the Allies used rubber inflatable tanks and recorded troop sounds to trick the German army into thinking the enemy was there.
What, there's a ghost army?
They called them ghost army because they didn't actually exist.
Yeah, don't get excited, Dan. It's not like the end of Indiana Jones.
I like the idea of having inflatable tanks because it means you blow up your own tanks.
Yeah. Nice.
Oh.
Do you know where the word tank comes from?
No.
No.
So tank was originally a code word. It was never intended to be what tanks were called. And it was, I think Churchill was at the head of the organization, which was, you know, pioneering tank making. And they were called something like land ships. It was called like the land ships organization or something like that in the First World War when they were developing them. And they just decided to call them tanks as a code word because they were going to send them into Russia disguised as water tanks. And first of all, they they called them water compartments at first, but because war officers tended to abbreviate
things. People kept mixing them up.
People kept going and urinating on the military vehicles. Wow. So they said, we can't call them WCs.
But they called them tanks because they wanted the Russians to think they were tanks of water.
But yeah, exactly.
The Russians were on our side in the First World War.
I know, I said Russians, and I hoped again, like Dan, that no one would pick me up.
It's just a little thing, like which side we were fighting.
People made these mistakes all the time.
Okay, I think we're going to have to keep moving on because we're short of time, aren't we? Okay, who is Jennifer Matthews? Jennifer Matthews is over here.
So parrotfish wear pyjamas, protective pyjamas at nighttime, and then they eat them in the morning.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't see anything special about that. I mean,
we said interesting facts. Okay. No, that's amazing.
So, cool. Yeah.
So they secrete a mucus that has a hole in the front and a hole in the back so that water can flow through. And the mucus is apparently meant to stop predators from smelling them. And it means that they're protected overnight whilst they sleep. But it's a vital source of protein, so they eat it in the morning.
Oh, my God.
Nice.
I mean, amazing.
Yeah.
Very good point.
It's not the sexiest pajamas in the world, is it? When you say, I'm just going to go slip into something more popular.
Just going to slip into something more mucousy. Yeah.
How do you like your breakfast?
And parrotfish, they're the guys who they make sand as well, do they?
Yeah, they poop islands.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Well, bit really? By bit.
Well, for an average parrotfish, they poop 275 grams per day. But the biggest parrotfish can make 90 kilograms.
Wow. 90 kilograms a day?
I don't actually know if it's a day. It might be per year. But the biggest parrotfish...
That's quite a difference. When you go to your doctor, they say...
How much are you pooing? It's either twice a day or twice a year.
How big an island have you produced?
But yeah, that's the it's this white kind of white sand that they get in the Caribbean and stuff, don't they?
Yeah, so they eat coral, and when they eat coral, they eat the tissue off the coral, and then they digest the calcium carbonate skeleton and poop the sand, and then but entire islands in the Caribbean have been made up by the sand.
Wow! Yeah.
So you could basically lie in a pile of sand.
I do that anyway. That's Well, how do you know so much about parrotfish?
I'm a marine biologist.
Are you?
Good. Oh,
nice.
Thanks.
You don't get a wolf whistle for that in any way.
Should we move on
to... Yeah, let's keep going.
Yeah, let's keep going. Okay, so...
So this is about the new tallest building in London. Whose is that?
Great. Andy, a Twitter one?
Actually, this is really similar to the other thing we just had. The fringe-limbed tree frog. Fringe-limbed tree frog parents grow extra layers of skin to feed their tadpoles. And this is... I like this so much because it's reminded me of my favourite fact at the moment, which is that... breast milk, mother's breast milk, is made from arses. When you have a baby and you stop producing breast milk, it's got fat cells in it, and the fat cells that are taken literally from the mother's bottom first is where they go from.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. No one else interested in that?
There's a lot of spiders who will eat their mother, aren't there? Or there's at least a few of them.
Really?
And so they'll give birth to the live spiders inside them, and they'll eat their way out.
Spiders.
Okay, what's your name and what is your fact, please?
So my name is Bapinda, and my fact is that the new tallest building in London is going to be called Undershaft.
Amazing.
Nice.
It's a really immature fact. I can't believe you brought it to the table.
Why is it being called that?
I don't know. I just read it on The Guardian and laughed a lot.
Yeah. That's literally the extent that I do my research as well. So don't worry about it. Actually, I was reading the other day, it's a building we've mentioned on the podcast before, but London, a building in London got voted the ugliest or the most horrible building around, and it's the walkie-talkie. And it was cited for being so bad because it keeps blowing people over and melting cars. The angle of the building has this magnifying on it that it's just melting cars. And the wind that is trapping, it's literally blowing people onto the street. And people are furious.
The architect who made it has designed another building in America which also has melted cars. And he's not learned from his mistakes.
He actually puts that on his CV now.
Have you got a car you need melted? Just get me to design a multi-billion-dollar building for you.
Alex was actually telling me earlier that the Shard in London goes down as deeper than Nelson's Column.
Does it?
I thought you were going to say it goes down deeper than it goes up.
I thought he was going to say that as well. Actually, I was quite disappointed.
Something that does do that is the Angel of the North. That goes...
Really?
It's pretty much exactly
goes down deeper than the Shard.
And the underside is devil-shaped, isn't it?
Yeah.
Messed up.
Shall we move on? Oh, wait, can I just say, because I find this really interesting, and I think I've never been allowed to say it on the podcast before, but we only recently discovered how tall Nelson's Column was. So it's been up since Nelson, so 200 years, and they just measured it a couple of years ago, and they realised, I think it's 4 metres higher than we thought, or it's maybe it's 4 feet. But isn't that weird? We'd never measured Nelson's Column.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
It's not that big.
You know, there are loads of Nelson's Columns all over the place.
Are there?
I mean, not millions, but there are, I think, a good dozen of them all over the UK. And there's one in Norfolk, which is where he was from, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just got an urn at the top of it. Not Nelson. So, there you go. But it is a Nelson's Column.
Nelson used to... I don't know if we ever put... I tried to get this on the podcast. I don't know if it ever made on. But Nelson used to have a little hat for his eye. He just had a tiny hat for his eye. And no one talks about it. And they should.
You literally tried to get that on every single week for about 2 months.
Well, because it was like, you know when you see American movies where they're like doing accounts and they had that sort of tennis hat that had the green that you could see through? Nelson had that on his eye, this little green thing, so that he could, because his eye got too much sun and he was like, I want to get less sun. So they created a little hat.
I have a fact about Nelson.
Okay, go on.
Do you have it? It's from Brian. Brian with a Y. You there? Hey.
Cool.
We'll go for a Twitter fact first.
Okay, we'll go for a Twitter fact. So this was sent to me by someone called Timworth89. And he said that in 1774, one newspaper estimated that out of the 872,564 married couples in England, only 9 were entirely happy.
You could read that as a whole 9 were entirely happy.
He sent me a clipping, an image of the clipping as well. It's so good. They had a breakdown of the whole 872,000.
Wow.
And it's like 1,300, the wives had eloped. 2,300, the husband had run away. There's about 19,000 that were in a state of open war.
Wow.
16,000 had a lot of inward hatred about each other.
Not that inward, if they're telling the interviewer.
And 51 couples were living in a state of indifferent hate.
Whoa.
But yeah.
Hang on, indifferent hate?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense at all.
Oh, yeah, okay. What period was this?
This was in 1774.
Okay. This is, you know, it's for about 200 years, but between about 1675 and 1850, only about 370 couples in England got divorced.
And everyone needed an act of parliament.
Exactly. So every time, how exciting is that? It's almost worth getting divorced. Every time you got divorced, they had to debate it in parliament.
I think they look good together.
That was hardly Hillary Benn, wasn't it? Shall we move on to the...
Sorry, yeah. Nelson.
Yeah,
fact,
sorry.
Yeah, so Nelson, in the Admiralty office in Nelson, used to go for, you know, reports and stuff. And he had a small mahogany box to stand on because, firstly, he was quite short. And secondly, the admirals sat on a raised platform to make them higher than everybody that would come before them to speak. so they maintained their authority. And he was the only person that ever had that concession.
Wow.
And I got to stand on that box, but I had to take my boots off first.
Right. Did he have to? Did he have to take his boots off first
Well?
Because because I was going to say, I think that does reduce your authority.
Kind of negated the concession, wouldn't it, really?
Yeah, indeed.
Stand up, take your boots off, same height. Yeah.
I think Gillian Anderson used to have to do that in The X-Files, Dana Scully. She used to have to stand on a box when they were filming. She's quite a bit smaller than David Duchovny, and so for scenes where they were standing chatting, she would stand on a box. And that happens a lot in movies, I think. Oh, Charles and Lady Di apparently did this as well. I have a Twitter fact about Charles and Lady Di, actually. So why don't we lead into that? When Prince Charles married Lady Diana, the TV cables put in place for the wedding were run by a ferret. And I Googled it, and it's true.
What?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
I don't mean he was physically with, like, a thing around his head. All right, camera two, let's do this. All right. Got a three. No, it was. They had to get cables, I guess, into. Westminster Abbey.
They have to go into small little holes, and this is you tie it to a ferret, and they run through, and they.
No way.
Yeah, I think British Aerospace have used it for some kind of aeronautical thing.
Yeah, they have.
Thing.
I think for building aeroplanes for some reason.
That's what I thought. That's what I was going to say, but I thought it sounded so ridiculous. Yeah. I didn't want to say.
Ferrets build aeroplanes. But I think they actually cancelled that eventually because they kept chewing through the wires. So I think they ended up being quite unreliable.
Right.
I seem to remember.
Someone sent me a tweet, at Bangai Shot You sent me a tweet. And it's almost the same as this. It's like there was a ferret called Misty who ran cabling for the US Space Command for the Y2K Center. And her fee was a strawberry Pop-Tart.
Who negotiated that? Because that was that... That sounds like she actually asked for that.
Yeah. It reminds me this of there's a bridge over the Niagara River near the Niagara Falls. And the problem with bridges is how do you get the first kind of thing over? So once you've got a bit of string over there, then you can pull something over and then you can pull something bigger over and bigger over and then you eventually have a bridge. But if it's a really big crevice...
Birds? You use a bird.
Well, it wasn't a bird, but it's close.
Frisbee. Oh.
Frisbee. No, it was a kite. A kite.
Oh, nice.
So they flew a kite up and then it kind of went over and then someone was on the other side and they could grab the kite and then you had a string over and then they could attach a bit of wire onto that and pull it across and then a bit of bigger wire.
And then a tiny bit of wood and then a little bit bigger bit of wood and then eventually a bridge. You can't get a frisbee across Niagara Falls, I think.
Can you?
This is true. So, you know...
How good are you at frisbee? You can get it across Niagara Falls.
I can't.
You can make it hover in the air while it deposits building materials. It's incredible.
You guys know the Aerobee Super Disc? Yeah. It's a great frisbee, guys. It's the one that's completely hollow. It's plastic and it's got a tough frame in the middle, so it keeps rigidity and stability, but it's rubber on the outside, so it doesn't hurt your hands. Anyway.
This week's podcast is brought to you...
It's the bee's knees, and they can get you... They've thrown one across Niagara Falls.
Yeah. When have you ever had a friend to throw frisbees to...
It does take a while to play when I'm playing with the Aerobee Super Disc because it goes so far.
Have you ever thought about getting a boomerang?
Okay, let's move on with another fact. Who has a fact that's about penises and the London Underground?
James, you're gonna need to narrow it down a bit.
Hi, my name's Tom.
Hi, Tom.
So when the new headquarters of the London Underground building was opened in 1929, the statue of the front of a naked boy was so controversial and there was such public outcry that the sculptor had to reduce the size of his penis by 1.5 inches.
Wow.
Dare we ask, from what? 12 is too much. 10.5 will be fine.
So is it that the shorter the penis, the lower the rating of the film?
It wasn't a film, it was a statue.
Yeah, I was extrapolating that that made it less obscene in the statue.
Oh.
Is that it becomes less obscene the smaller the penis?
I mean, yeah. Yeah.
Are you sensing an opening for some smallly endowed people?
Don't say opening.
Yeah.
What was the? Do you know any more about what? Why they had a statue of a naked boy in the first place?
Yeah, kind of. So it was by Jacob Epstein, who is this avant-garde, quite brutalist sculptor, and it was one of his first major commissions. He has this quite long history of creating sculptures. Like, he has one on what's now Zimbabwe House on the Strand. Also been massively defaced because it was just full of naked people, and people didn't like that in Edwardian Britain. But this one, it was a kind of a compromise because there was public outcry, and the head of the tube at the time offered his resignation to keep the statue. It was that big a deal. They wanted to keep the CEO of the London Underground, but as a compromise, they said, okay, we'll just trim the penis a little bit.
Is that what happened to all ancient statues? Like, did David have a massive cock originally?
They thought it was more civilized to have small wedding
cock. They thought it was better to be small because if it was too big, you would lose heat and lose vigor.
But this website had a picture of what had been done to the statue, and underneath it just said, yeah, this has actually happened, and you thought that cuts to London Underground today were controversial.
Yeah. That's good. Very good.
Hey, we should wrap up soon.
Oh, really?
So maybe let's just do a couple more. Why don't we do a Twitter one each that we all like?
Okay.
I'll start with mine. This was sent in by Jonathan Warlow. Claire Danes and all her movies were banned from the Philippines after she badmouthed it in an interview. So they just said, no more Claire Danes movies.
Really?
I'm kind of using this as an excuse, though, to talk about the Philippines, because my dad's a hairdresser, and he also, he likes to sing Bee Gees covers, and he's got a really nice voice. And on the equivalent of Jonathan Ross there, they don't really have many people there to go on the show. So he often got asked to go on and sing Bee Gees covers on this equivalent of Jonathan Ross called the Johnny Litton Show. And he was on it one day, and Imelda Marcos saw it, and she's called him up and sent a letter saying, yeah, I'd like to invite you to sing karaoke with me once a week. And you can't really say no to someone like Imelda Marcos. So he had to do it. This is the fact that I learnt off him through the back of doing that, is that she said to him one day when they were mid-Bee Gees song, Roger, I get so tired about people talking about my having the largest shoe collection all the time. No one talks about the fact that I have the largest collection of spoons. And she apparently likes to brag that she has the largest collection of silverware in the world, and no one talks about it. All the shoes. She's like, oh yeah, the fucking shoes. No one talks to her about the silverware. So Anna, final facts?
So my favorite fact on Twitter actually was that this is from @Gulbatasaurus, and it was that the Korean term for grinding in a club is booby booby. Apparently.
Very
like
nice.
That.
Andy, what do you got?
I really like the fact, this is exactly how it was worded. It's from Mina Kozluka. Ottoman Emperor Abdul Hamid made it illegal to use the words sibling, star, bedbug, and nose. And then in brackets, he had a weird nose.
And James?
Okay, this fact came from IDKT, IDKT. And it is that in the olden days, to send paper money through the post, people used to tear it in two pieces and post the halves separately. I don't even know if it's true, but I just really like the ingenious idea of doing that.
I've tried to present a sellotaped up £10 note to the newsagents and they didn't like it.
There was a guy in China, he didn't trust banks. And so he buried all of his money underground and then it all got eaten by worms.
Oh, wow.
And he managed to kind of save about a third of it that was all in pieces and took it to the bank in a big bag of soil. And then said, is there anything you can do with this? And they managed to retrieve about a third of his money. So the very thing that he didn't trust ended up saving some of his cash.
Oh, wow.
I bet he's convinced that the worms are working for the bank, though.
I read ages ago that all astronauts, when they initially were going to the moon, that they were all given half notes of $1 note in America, American money. They would get the half and they would have to present it back to NASA when they arrived. And so they could put the two halves together so that they could check whether or not aliens had cloned them and come back.
But
and
were... The idea that the aliens would not have the technology to just keep hold of a half-dollar bill.
Yeah. We can clone a human, but that half-dollar bill, there's no way of doing that.
All right, let's wrap it up on that. So... All right, that's it. That's all of your facts. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to get in contact with us about the things that were said, don't get in contact with the people who said them. They're all on Twitter. You can reach them at their Twitter handles, or you can track down the people who are in this room. We do have a list of their names, and we will make it public. And we'll see you again next week with another episode. Goodbye.
Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12-powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.